The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, Anthony, how are you?
Boker Tov, Chanukah Sameach. Before we talk about earthquakes and tremors, it is Chanukah, and we often use the word menorah and Chanukiah interchangeably. It seems like they're one and the same thing, but they're really not. So the question is, do people know what the difference is between a menorah and a Chanukiah?
All right. If you know the answer, if you know the difference between a menorah and a Chanukiah, you tell us. You send through your answer, 34519, that's a text line. You can also send a telegram on 061-895-1019, or you can tweet at Chai FM. They'll all come through, and then we'll wrap it up by the time Anthony's finished the report. Anthony.
We definitely will. We're going to talk quickly before the main thing is about what's going on in Eilat. There were reports of an earth tremor this morning. Nothing too significant. 3.7 apparently on the Richter scale, originating in Jordan. People in Eilat did feel the tremor. No injuries, no damage. But it is part of a whole series of tremors, earthquakes that have been felt just recently. There was one 5.2, which originated northwest of Cyprus, was also felt in Israel. That was earlier this month. There was also quite a slightly larger earthquake, which was felt in Turkey. This was a 5.5 on the Richter scale, reported off the coast of Antalya. Also relatively mild. But we still are waiting for the big one. Everybody is convinced that it is time, that the time is now for a big earthquake. Of course, we do live quite near to a fault line, which runs along the length of the Jordan Valley. That is a fault line that has resulted in some quite significant earthquakes in the past, but not recently. So we always feeling tremors. There is always seems to be movement around. Nothing too significant at the moment. So we will just continue to wait and see at the moment. Nothing really too much to report from this morning's, which was apparently at around 4:30 this morning.
Just generally, I mean, would you say that Israel is prepared for a major earthquake?
I think that a lot of work has gone into trying to prepare us more for an earthquake than has been the case up until now. Massive construction program called TAMA, which is really focused on making buildings earthquake-proof, apartment buildings. The building standards up until now have really not been to build buildings to earthquake standards. The newer buildings, the more recent ones, are being built to earthquake standards, but there's so many older buildings around Israel which are clearly not earthquake-proof, and a massive program to upgrade those buildings to make them earthquake-proof, and also at the same time to improve the general look and feel of the buildings to make them look a little bit better outside. And it's interesting how that building program has been financed, because what's happened is that builders come along to an apartment building, make an offer to the residents, the owners of the apartments who live there. And then the way that it's financed is that the builder will build on one or two floors at the top, and he will have those apartments to sell in order to cover the entire cost of the project, of making the building earthquake proof, of improving it, in many cases putting in elevators, lifts, which old buildings which don't have lifts, and then it's being financed by and large by the builder selling off those apartments that he builds on top. In recent months and years, I've heard that they're slowing this program down. Is Israel ready for a big earthquake? Not yet, I think, is the answer, but more ready than was the case before.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we won't have to put that to the test anytime soon. Let's talk about COVID and coronavirus in Israel.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we've crossed a very significant moment in our fight against the coronavirus pandemic, where we now hit 3,000 people who have died since the start of the pandemic. And this means that while Israel is not one of the worst performing countries where corona is concerned, unfortunately also not one of the best performing countries. In recent months, recent days and weeks, we've seen another spike in terms of the number of cases that are being diagnosed. We're heading into our third wave, where some countries are hardly out of their first wave. And after the first wave have managed to control it quite significantly, countries like Australia, New Zealand, and a few other countries, particularly in the Far East. Europe is now really experiencing a massive second wave. Israel's been through its second wave. The second wave was not pretty. And now we're heading almost into a third wave. But there are some good things that we can talk about. First of all, that we've acquired all of these vaccines. The vaccine program is due to be rolled out during the course of next week already, so everybody's getting prepared for that. The other piece of good news is that the vaccine that's been developed in Israel itself has hit a new moment where we will be moving now into the second stage of trials of tests on that vaccine, the first stage having concluded very successfully. None of the people who were involved in the trial reported any side effects from being vaccinated by this Israeli vaccine. So we're moving now into a much broader second phase, which will involve a few thousand people being trialed, being tested for Israel's vaccine. So that's a really good thing for further down the track, because at the moment we're really all focused on the Pfizer vaccine and on the Moderna one, which is due to come to us, which we've acquired quite a large quantity, something like 6 million doses of the Moderna one. So we hope that that will come pretty soon, be approved, and will come. In the meantime, we've heard that the Pfizer vaccine was approved by the FDA. That's a critical moment. Unfortunately, we have a situation with a Knesset member of Knesset, David Bitan, who is being ventilated as a result of his illness from COVID-19. A little unfortunate the way that this all transpired, because he was diagnosed. He felt ill to begin with without having been tested and diagnosed. He denied the fact that he actually had coronavirus, claimed that his cough was a wet cough rather than a dry cough. It all seemed really silly under the circumstances, when we know that people are becoming ill with corona so easily. He then, of course, was diagnosed. It turns out that he'd been at a ceremony to welcome Ethiopian Olim from Ethiopia back. So he'd been exposed to quite a number of people, even though that particular event was with masks and people were practicing social distancing. The Prime Minister himself has undergone 2 coronavirus tests within the last few days, both negative, but he is now apparently going to some limited quarantine just to be sure, even though he is constantly being tested. So unfortunately, David Bitan is now quite seriously ill in hospital. We obviously hope that he will recover very quickly, but certainly the example that he gave to people, the way that he dealt with things, was not the best. And so we will hopefully learn from that, and people will keep more careful to keep well. And we certainly hope that the vaccination program will have an effect, but only time will tell.
Anthony, last time I don't think you actually had an answer as to the cost of the vaccine to Israeli citizens. Is it going to be free, or is it going to be a cost?
At the moment, as far as I'm aware, it is not going to cost people anything to be vaccinated, but it's going to be very, very carefully policed. Not everybody will simply be able to have a run on the medical health organization in order to be vaccinated. It's going to be very, very cautiously rolled out according to particular groups. And so as long as you fall within the group that is currently being vaccinated, you should be entitled to go to your medical health organization and to claim a vaccine from them. And the way that, for example, the flu vaccinations have been done has been quite organized also in similar groups. You've had to go online, make a reservation. They know who you are. If you don't fall within the group that is entitled to receive the vaccination, you're simply unable to make an appointment online. If you can't make an appointment, obviously you can't be vaccinated. So that, I expect, is the way that they're going to roll out the corona vaccine. A little report came out from one of the medical health organizations, Maccabi, where they claim that they've now undertaken more than 1 million COVID-19 tests, which for a relatively small country like Israel is a significant number. But some people are saying still not nearly enough. So, you know, lots of mixed messages at the moment. The malls are open, the gyms are closed, the restaurants are only available for takeaways, no in-house in-restaurant dining at the moment. So still quite a lot of limitations as to how we go about our daily business. But as I say, hopefully the vaccine is going to make a big difference. And then lots of questions about what we do once people have been vaccinated, because there's still quite a lot of people who are opposing the idea of being vaccinated, either people who are anti-vaxxers in general or people who are concerned that the COVID vaccination hasn't gone through a proper testing period, enough time to really understand what the potential side effects might be. And so there are quite a significant number of Israelis, even up to 50% of the population, who claim that they will either not or be very reluctant to have a vaccination. And so the question is, what will happen next? Because the government is talking about rolling out the so-called green passport, where once you've had the vaccination, you will effectively have a green passport, which will entitle you to do things that other people are not entitled to do. So I can imagine, for example, that you would only be able to go to the gym or turn up at the mall or go into a restaurant if you have a green passport. Is that equal to discrimination? Is that legal in a democratic environment? Well, those questions are yet to be answered.
Very interesting. All right, let's leave that there. Anthony, can we talk about... Do you think that there could be a possible prisoner swap between Israel and Hamas?
Well, there's a lot of talk about a prisoner swap, a lot of rumors in the press, even official responses in an unofficial way. One Knesset member, Tzvi Hauser, spoke out in the parliament saying that he's actually seen details of what the prisoner swap might entail, and he was extremely concerned. He called on the prime minister to cancel the swap because he felt that the price would be too expensive. So it seems as if, though, there is some truth to the rumors that there are talks going on in the background. Israel is still seeking the release of the bodies of Shaul Oron and Hadar Golden, who were two soldiers who are considered to have been killed in 2014 during Operation Protective Edge, and also seeking the return of two living civilians, Avera Mengistu and Hisham Al-Sayed, both of whom we understand have learning difficulties and who of their own volition went into Gaza and then disappeared. And so Israel is seeking Hamas to return those two individuals to Israel, to their families. And there are many rumors about what Israel might be considering as a swap for these two bodies and these two individuals. First of all, there was talk about the fact that Israel has offered vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine, to Hamas as part of this prisoner swap, which I think many Israelis would say, okay, you know, providing we have enough for ourselves or providing we can, you know, source vaccine from somewhere else. I don't think have any major objection to giving Hamas COVID-19 vaccine or helping them in their fight against coronavirus. The issue comes where they're demanding the release of certain captives, certain Hamas members who are in Israeli jails. And we all remember what happened with the Gilad Shalit, prisoner swap where more than 1,000 prisoners were exchanged. So this is, I think, where Tzvi Hauser is saying, don't allow this deal to go through because potentially there might be prisoners who might be returned to Hamas and then may return to commit terror acts again.
Knowing what Israel knows now, in fact, Anthony, could you stay with us? Have you got time to stay with us?
I will stay with you.
I want to talk about this. I mean, you know, in 2011, 1,027 prisoners who were all imprisoned for violent or acts of terrorism, right, or planning acts of terrorism, are exchanged for one life. After the break, I want to find out from you if you think Israel would do things differently knowing what they know now.
When God created the lofty mountains, the oceans teeming with life, the planet, and the galaxies, God also thought the world needed one of you. What did you do today to better the world? Big or small, we would love to hear from you. Email Kathy with a K at highfm.com. Share your story. Inspire others. Change the world. Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining me on the line right now to continue our discussion is Anthony Reich, our Israel correspondent. And, you know, there's a possible prisoner swap being negotiated between Israel and Hamas. Hamas holds two Israeli citizens as well as the bodies of two IDF soldiers. And you know, going back to the most recent prisoner swap, that took place in 2011, wasn't it, Anthony? 2011 was the most recent one? It was Gilad Shalit.
Correct. Well, the most recent official prisoner swap was in 2011 for Gilad Shalit, and you're right, 1,027 prisoners were released. About a third of those who were released at that time were actually serving life sentences for a terror attacks that had been carried out on Israelis. Obviously, a very, very controversial swap, and went against the recommendations of the so-called Shamgar report, which was written by a committee that was appointed in 2008. The Shamgar report was very, very specific because obviously we recognize in our society that this is a very controversial issue, and it's an issue that doesn't have any single view associated with it. I think that if you had to ask 100 people what they thought, I think you would get 50 people saying one thing and 50 people saying another thing, because everybody holds a slightly different view, typical of a Jewish country, what you would expect of a Jewish country, everybody opposing everybody else. But the Shamgar report was relatively clear, which said that Israel should only free a small number of prisoners per soldier and only one body or one living prisoner in exchange for a body. That was what the Shamgar report said. This was a commission that was already appointed 12 years ago. Since then, however, we haven't adhered to those recommendations. By the way, the Shamgar report put that recommendation out because of the massive political ramifications that inevitably result from any prisoner exchange, particularly one where you have 1,027 people, of whom something like 300 or 400 were convicted of terror activities, being exchanged for one person in return. And then, with the benefit of hindsight, we've seen a very significant number of those people, 1,027 who were released, have actually returned to terror activities, many of whom have been rearrested subsequently as a result of being involved in terror activities. So the cynics amongst us would say, it doesn't matter how many people we release, let's release them all because we know how to rearrest them again. And so therefore, it's all just a kind of a temporary situation. It's a moot point. We'll release them, we'll rearrest them, we'll be back to square one. Not quite as simple as that, because obviously, in order for us to rearrest them, we have a legal system which says you have to rearrest them for some particular reason. So having released them, you can't simply rearrest them for the crimes that they'd originally been arrested for and imprisoned for. There has to be something that happens subsequent in order for them to be rearrested and for them to be charged and convicted. So it's not quite as simple as that. I still think that we send a very important message out to the citizens who live in this country, all of whom are required to serve in the military, when we exchange prisoners, as we did for Gilad Shalit, or hopefully in exchange for the bodies of Hadar Golden and Oron Shaul. I think that when we as parents take our children and deposit them with the IDF, with the Israeli Defense Force, for their compulsory military service, we expect that we get something in return. And what we get in return is an undertaking by the government that they will do everything in their power to look after those soldiers that we deposit with them while they're serving the country. And if, heaven forbid, something happens to them, that they are either injured or chas v'chalila might be killed or kidnapped during the course of their service, it is our expectation as parents that the country will do everything that they possibly can to return them home, however that might be. And that's certainly what the families of Hadar Golden and Oron Shaul are expecting, even though those bodies have been in Hamas's possession now for approximately 6 years. Hadar Golden's parents, Leah and Simcha, wrote on Twitter that they praise the exchange of medical aid for their son. And more than that, Hadar Golden's brother also wrote to say, look, so many prisoners have been released on a piecemeal basis without a prisoner swap. Every once in a while, Israel is expected to make some sort of a gesture to create an atmosphere for peace, whatever. And there have been prisoners who've been released under those constellations, in return for which Israel received nothing. So where does this all get counted up at the end of the day? And why do we not consider that those prisoners have potentially already been released and we should be getting our bodies and our citizens back from Hamas? Of course, all of this makes it more attractive for Hamas to kidnap Israelis.
It's making them targets. Now you're attributing a much greater value to your regular IDF soldier. Now, Anthony, I've got a question for you personally. As a father who has seen his sons go through the IDF, I'm going to ask you this question as a parent. So Gilad Shalit's parents, 1,027 terrorists were released for the life of their son, which I have no doubt is, you know, very welcome. How many would be enough for any parent? At which point you would say, you know what, it's actually, you cannot release 10,000 prisoners who have all committed terror to save the life of one child or one IDF soldier. At what point is that the no-go, that line in the sand?
Well, I think,
and I know it's a hard question, but it's
really a line in the sand.
Yeah.
For a parent, I don't think there's a line in the sand, because I think as a parent, you would say, do whatever it takes to bring home my child. That's what a parent would say. And I recall so vividly when the bodies of two IDF soldiers were released from Lebanon in exchange for live prisoners and bodies, and that whole prisoner swap that took place so many years ago, there was the question, is that too much? Are we paying too much? And the answer that I gave at that stage, because my son asked me this question, he was at the time a high school student, and he was furious about how much Israel had paid in return for these two bodies. And I just said to him, look, think about yourself at the cabinet meeting when it comes to the vote as to whether you're going to bring those two bodies back or not. Okay, so think about the fact that you have deployed the best negotiating team that you can possibly find. You know that these people are good negotiators. They're going to get the best possible deal. They've done their negotiations. They've tried whatever they can in order to reduce the price. They bring a deal to you at the cabinet, and it is within your gift at that very moment in time to say yes or no to bringing those bodies home. While you're saying yes or no to bringing those bodies home, you're also saying yes or no to releasing terrorists. Of course, that's part of the deal. But can you, within your own conscience, really vote against a deal that you are convinced the best negotiators have been deployed in order to bring home the deal that you can possibly bring home? And at that moment, I think the penny dropped. I said, think about yourself at the cabinet meeting. The prime minister says, this is the deal. Those in favor, put your hand up now. Do you put your hand up or do you keep your hand down? Where are you on this particular deal? It's a very, very controversial issue. Not simple, not for a parent, not for a lawmaker, not for a member of government, not for anybody, because we value our people and we're not ashamed to say that we value our people, we value our soldiers, we want them to come home. We don't write people off under any circumstances. But, of course, it creates a target. And that's not what we want.
Exactly. Exactly. At what point is the individual valued above the society? Anyhow, Anthony, that's where we're going
to
leave it. It's a very interesting.
To people very quickly before we go, Kathy, I know we're late, but the difference between a Chanukiah.
Oh, wait, no. We've got lots of responses from our listeners. Can I tell you?
Have we? Okay.
Yes, we do. Anthony. Okay. So, Mervin was the first to weigh in. He says a menorah was used in the Beis HaMikdash. It had seven candles. A Chanukiah is used only for Chanukah. Karen, she weighed in. A menorah has seven candles. They're also littered in the temple. Chanukiah has nine candles. Chanukah Sameach. And let's see who else. Jay also weighing in, saying a menorah has seven branches and is the symbol of Israel. A Chanukiah has eight branches specifically for Chanukah.
Very good. And also the menorah, by the way, is the national symbol. We can see it on the badge of Israel, and a massive menorah stands outside the Knesset building. So well done to those people.
They
are not interchangeable, because a menorah wouldn't work for Chanukah. It'd be two days short.
Yeah, I'd like to see a Chanukah made out of Sufganiyot. Maybe we can work on that for next year. Or Fetcook,
Anthony. Be careful what you wish for.
Fetcook and Cook sisters. We need some South African traditions then, Ranana. Anyhow, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Chag Sameach. And we'll catch up with you, Anthony Reich. God bless. Bye-bye. And thanks for staying with me.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.